Hello and welcome to the English Cybersecurity Podcast. This is episode number 5 of our podcast. And in this podcast, we aim to make cybersecurity easy to understand for everyone. So for this episode, I wanted to start talking about cybersecurity in the workplace, and then maybe even getting into some of the cybersecurity tools, just kind of an introduction to those. For a recap, in our previous episodes, we talked about data protection and privacy. We talked about networking and security concepts in networking. We also talked about best practices. We talked about common threats and attacks. And then the very first episode was an introduction to cybersecurity in general. So today we're going to focus on security in the workplace. And what does that mean? And what can you expect if you're a cybersecurity professional and you're trying to get into this space? What can you expect in the workplace? Some of those topics are going to include things like acceptable use policies and other information security related policies. We'll talk a little bit about, you know, corporate devices or bring your own device and things like that. And then, believe it or not, physical security kind of plays a little bit of a role there as well, especially for physical offices. And then we'll talk a little bit about security awareness. Now, if we have time, I did want to start getting an introduction into some of the common cybersecurity tools like antivirus, firewalls, SIMs, password managers, anything and everything, just kind of the basics, and start down that path too of some of the most common and kind of best in breed products that are out there for cybersecurity. So security in the workplace, what can you expect? It's different at every company that you go to, of course. Some companies are much more mature as far as security goes, and some are, unfortunately, just starting their security journey. And in a lot of cases, you'll find that it's kind of somewhere in the middle at most places you go. The smaller organizations are going to typically have less security controls than a larger organization. However, that doesn't necessarily mean that the larger organizations are more secure. It just means that they've got the money to spend on security. They've got a security team. They've got the tools at those bigger companies. Whereas smaller organizations, they may not be able to afford all that security, the security team, all those tools, things like that. So it could be very expensive, right? And kind of the general, you know, rule of thumb, I guess, if you will, for what you hear about cybersecurity spending, typically you spend a percentage of your IT budget on cybersecurity. That percentage, you know, varies greatly, I should say. You know, some companies, it's 1% of their IT budget. Some companies, it's more like 6 to 8%. But that's typically about it. You're not going to see a lot of companies, you know, unless they are a security first company, you know, getting much over, you know, 10% of their IT budget going to security. So when you think about that in the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot. But IT is a massive thing, right? So you may have let's say you've got $1 million per year IT budget. Okay, 10% of that. Yeah, that's not going to be enough, is it? So it just kind of depends on where you go and how much that budget is. Now, in a perfect world, you would have anywhere from 30 to 40%. But again, that's mostly, you know, I would say like government agencies, places like that, or even the financial industry. You'll see a lot more security controls because they are heavily regulated and they're required to have those security controls. So they'll be spending way more on their security budget than most. If I had to guess what the average is, I'd say it's probably 5 to 10% is probably the average. But again, at a smaller company, they may not be able to afford that, so it may be less than 5%. It all just kind of depends. So that's a big part of it. And, you know, depending on how much budget you have will, of course, dictate how mature you are, how many tools you can get, how many people you can have. All those things kind of play into that budget. Another big part of security in the workplace is your policies. So there's so many different policies to talk about. You have things like an acceptable use policy, which kind of outlines what is okay to do on your work computer and what is not okay, things like that. And then you've got overall like information security policies. You could have an information security program that has kind of sub policies within that program, if you will. So you'll have a policy about VPN access. You'll have a policy about mobile devices, a policy about whatever it is. It could be a million different things. But policies are a really big part of cybersecurity because you want to have those policies and guidelines established so that you have something that you can enforce. And those policies are going to have to be reviewed and then also, you know, approved by your upper management, make sure that they all agree. Sometimes you also have to get the legal teams involved to not only approve those policies, but write those policies or reword some of it, just to make sure that you're not saying something you're not supposed to when it comes to legal jargon. So policies are massive. They're also a great baseline starting point. So if you're just starting a security program, for example, you know, you could start with those policies and say, hey, here's the policies that we want to try to shoot for. Let's build our program around these policies, right? Here's what we want to do. Write it down in policy. We want to have these controls. We want to do this. We want to do that, whatever it is. And then once those policies are written and established and approved, now you can go execute and then implement those controls that you've outlined in that policy. So policies can be very, very helpful for starting your program, but also it's very important to help enforce your program and enforce those security controls that you're trying to implement, because you may get some people that say, why do I have to do this? Well, you can say it's our company policy. So it gives you some backing when, you know, let's say someone gets upset about, oh, I don't want to use this multi-factor app on my phone. Well, sorry, it's part of our policy. You have to, you're required. And, you know, sometimes in some cases, you can even have those policies enforced so much that if someone, you know, steps outside the boundaries, they could even be terminated or written up at the very least. So those policies are very, very important to have. And it just helps you establish what controls you want to have. And it's all written down and everybody knows what those guidelines are. There's no surprises. Some other stuff I wanted to touch on briefly as far as workplace security is corporate devices versus personal devices. This is a very massive topic. I'm going to try to keep it pretty high level. But essentially, you know, your corporate devices are going to be your corporate laptop, your corporate phone, if you get a phone, or tablet even for that matter. Those are all of your corporate devices. But then you have BYOD, which is bring your own device, which is when someone has their company email, for example, on their personal cell phone, because they want to be able to check their email on their cell phone. Or they may have some sort of work-related app on their phone as well, because they're on the road a lot. They need to work from their phone. They need to do whatever from their phone. So they may have some work-related applications on their phone as well. And these can be very tricky to secure because it's on someone's personal phone. How do you secure something like that? How do you, you know, prevent them from doing, you know, prevent them from taking data out of that application and storing it somewhere else? How do you secure the information that's on that personal device? These are some of the challenges that you run into with the bring your own device stuff, because, you know, it's a little bit of the wild, wild west if you don't have any kind of security controls around that. And we'll dive into what those controls are in future episodes here. But either way, those are the challenges that you run into. So on all your corporate devices, you're going to have your EDR, your MDR tools, you're going to have your DLP tools, you're going to have your CASB tools. CASB, by the way, is Cloud Access Security Broker. That's basically in a way, it protects their internet traffic and what they're doing on the internet. It also helps with data loss prevention and things like that. But you're going to have all those agents that are running on those corporate devices to help implement your security controls and your security policies that you want. So, but on those personal devices, you're not going to have those controls. You're not going to have the endpoint protection, the EDR, MDR, XDR. You're not going to have CASB tools. You're not going to have DLP tools. It's someone's personal device. And good luck getting them to install any kind of corporate security on their personal device. And rightfully so, right? This is why a lot of companies also issue work phones or tablets even. And they say, hey, if you want to do anything on the go, you have to use your work device because it has the security that we want. You're not allowed to use your personal cell phone, for example. So anyway, those are some of the challenges that you run into there with corporate devices versus, you know, personal devices or BYOD. Something that a lot of people don't think about in cybersecurity is physical security. And you may think, why in the world does physical security matter? Well, think about it. You may have a server room with all of your servers, right? Do you want to just allow anybody to walk in there? Definitely not, right? What if someone goes in and unplugs something? Or they try to go plug something in, like a USB? And, you know, there's a lot of different scenarios, right? But physical security matters, especially when it comes to protecting your, not only your servers, but also just the office space where you have all of the computers. If someone can gain access to that area, it just takes, what, a split second for someone to plug in a USB device that's malicious, right? They can walk in. If there's no physical security, they can walk in, walk up to the nearest computer, plug in their device, and be out the door in less than 10 seconds, right? So you want to have that physical security as well, with access cards and badges and whatever you use. If it's biometrics, doesn't matter, but some sort of access control that prevents, you know, just anybody from the street from walking in and walking around your facility and doing whatever they want to your computers. So physical security does play a role in cybersecurity, albeit not as much as all the other pieces, but physical security definitely does matter. So don't overlook that, especially when you have physical offices, you know, and most companies do, but a lot of people work remote now, and that's something else we'll dive into as far as how to secure that. But either way, the physical security definitely matters, so keep that in mind, especially for your server room, things like that. Make sure that you're protecting those, you know, high-value targets, like your servers and infrastructure. Some other, you know, security in the workplace topics, things like security awareness training. This is something that you may have to work with your HR department on to implement. You know, when someone onboards and they first start their job, their new job at your company, well, typically what you do is you go through a whole bunch of training videos, right? You watch hours and hours of training videos. You got to watch all these HR training videos. Well, a cybersecurity training video should be part of that onboarding process. If it's not, that's something where you want to kind of go to your HR department and say, hey, you know, we need to also include some sort of cybersecurity awareness training, you know, as part of the onboarding training videos and onboarding process, right? And then you need to do training kind of ad hoc, if you will, or even just on an ongoing basis, whether it's annually, semi-annually, whatever it is. And you may, you know, go say, hey, you clicked on this fish test that we just had, so you need more training. We're going to give you more. But you didn't click on the fish test, so you don't have to take this additional training. There's a lot of different ways that you can do that, but you have to build a security awareness or a security aware culture. And that is where you become become an advocate for security. So any meeting that you're in, anything that you're doing, you want to be that advocate for security. You're going to say, hey, whoa, this isn't secure. We need to do this, this, and this. Or, hey, I like what you're doing there, but that's not as secure as if we did it this way. So let's change it and let's do it this other way, right? So you want to try to build that culture so that way people just start thinking about security more and more and more. So that way, when they start doing their new projects, their new IT projects, they're going to think, oh, wait, what did the security guy say about this? I should probably go talk to them, right? And see what I should do in this situation. So that's something that you have to be an advocate. You have to basically, you know, just be the cheerleader, if you will, for cybersecurity within your company. And that goes a long way. But it does take a lot of time to build that culture, right? But the ways that you do that are through, you know, phishing tests. So you can send out some simulated phishing tests to your end users, get them thinking about it. And if some of those people click on the phish test, I mean, it depends how big your company is, but in some cases, you may want to work with that user directly and say, hey, you know, did you see this phish test? You know, hey, what happened? Talk to me about this. And the more you start doing that, the more people will start thinking about security. Also, too, you want to have a way for people to report suspicious emails to you. So train your people on, like, hey, if you see an email that looks fishy, it looks, you know, sketchy, whatever it is, please report that to the InfoSec department so we can take a look at it. All of those kinds of things help build that security culture and get people thinking about security much more than they would without somebody doing that. So those are just some very basic, you know, high-level security awareness things, but you really need the buy-in from your executive management, your C-level executives. They really need to be the one to help you build that security culture. And also, you know, they need to be backing any kind of security initiatives that you're trying to do. You need their support. I mean, they are the top dogs at that company. You need them to help you with whatever it is you're trying to achieve when it comes to cybersecurity. So getting that executive buy-in and that executive support is, it's, if you don't have it, let's just say if you don't have it, your security program is not going to go very far. But having that executive support, that executive buy-in is going to help you so much. It's going to help you get things done. It's going to help you move things forward. It's going to help the security program mature. A lot of different things that it's good for. So if you're at an organization that doesn't have a CIO or a CISO or even a CTO, that can be very challenging when it comes to building that security culture because there's no one at that C level that is thinking about security, right? But if you have, you know, chief technology officer, chief information officer, or a CISO, chief information security officer, all of those are going. All of those C-level executives should be thinking about cybersecurity, so you can get some buy-in from them. Now, they may want you to do things a certain way. Like if you know you have a CTO and they say, "Hey, I like your idea, but let's do this instead." You're going to have to kind of, you know, do what they're asking you to do. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, because if you do what they ask you to do and then you go to them with a new idea, they're much more likely to want to go with your new idea as well. If you're helping them, you know, it's a vice versa. They're like, "Hey, I'm going to help you. And then if I help you, then you help me," that kind of thing. So it just goes a long way. So try to build that rapport, that relationship with your C-level executives, and try to get that buy-in from them so that you can push those security initiatives and really mature your security program across the organization. Another thing to mention about security in the workplace is that there should not be any expectation of user privacy. So as a security professional, you are going to have to, you know, look at sensitive information. You're going to have to read people's emails. You're going to have to read emails that are coming in that might be malicious or phishing. So there's a lot of oversight, and people call it Big Brother or whatever you want to call it. But really, there should be no expectation of privacy when it comes to your end users, because ultimately you're there to protect the company. And if one of your end users is doing something they're not supposed to, well, you kind of have to be the police there and prevent them from doing that. So that's something that is oftentimes overlooked, in my opinion. I don't think people realize, you know, that there really is no expectation of privacy, and that your company can review the logs of anything and everything that you've done at any point in time. So that's something to also, I would state in your policies, and especially like your acceptable use policies and things like that, you would put in there that, you know, there's no expectation of privacy for the end user. Okay, so let's jump into a quick introduction of some cybersecurity tools. I'm going to go fairly quick here. I know we're getting close to the 30-minute mark here, so I want to keep it right around 30 minutes. But essentially, you know, some of the basic tools that you're going to be working with are your endpoint protection, which are, there's really, you know, right now the two top dogs when it comes to EDR or MDR or XDR is CrowdStrike is the first one, and then SentinelOne is the second one. Those two companies are right there at the top when it comes to MDR. And again, MDR is managed detection and response. EDR is endpoint detection and response. The difference there is that when it's managed, you have a third-party company managing those alerts that come through and taking action on your behalf. But the EDR tools, those are the two top dogs. There are others out there, Cylance, Carbon Black. There's a whole bunch, right? Cortex XDR is from Palo Alto. Carbon Black got purchased by VMware, And VMware then got purchased by Broadcom. So Carbon Black has kind of gone by the wayside. Cylance, similar kind of situation. They were purchased by BlackBerry, of all things. And when that purchase happened, they just kind of fell off the map. And that's when CrowdStrike really started taking off, and SentinelOne right there behind them. Cortex XDR from Palo is right up there. I would say it's just under CrowdStrike and SentinelOne, in my opinion. I think Cortex is just underneath those two. And it's a little lesser known, but definitely a good product as well. So that's your endpoint protection. Now, we used to call that antivirus, which technically it still is. However, the old school antivirus like Symantec and Norton and McAfee and Trend Micro and vendors like that, that was the old school way of protecting your system. What they would do is they would use what they call definitions. And those definitions or signatures were basically, hey, this virus has this signature or this specific code in it, right? So they would write a rule in the antivirus that said, hey, if you see this specific signature or this code, block it. Well, all the bad guys had to do is change that code just a little bit, and it changes the signature, and then it can bypass your antivirus. Now, that was the old school way of doing it. The new tools are much more robust. They look at the actions that you're taking, as well as, you know, the program that you're trying to run, all kinds of things like that. And they, you know, instead of just blocking a signature, they block not only actions, but behaviors and things like that. So it's a lot more robust and actually prevents a lot more malicious activity. Okay, so those are kind of the top vendors for EDR or MDR. Let's talk about a SIEM. It's S-I-E-M. It's Security Information and Event Management. What is a SIEM? So a SIEM is basically a log aggregator. What is a log? Logs are basically the traces that you leave behind when you take any kind of action on a system. So if you log into your computer, there's a log of you logging in. So it writes that to a log file and says, hey, this person logged in at this time and this date, right? So you've got a timestamp, you know who it was, when they logged in, and oftentimes it'll show like where they logged in from, things like that. So your SIEM is what takes all the logs from all your different systems and puts them all into one place. It aggregates all those logs together. And then based on the information in those logs, the SIEM will send you an alert. It'll say, hey, this person, you know, normally logs in at, you know, between 8 and 5 o'clock, Monday through Friday. Well, all of a sudden they're logging in Saturday at 3 a.m. It's going to send you an alert saying this is abnormal for this user, right? This doesn't seem right. Or like all of a sudden you're, you know, typically you log in from the United States, then all of a sudden you're logging in from Bangladesh. Well, what's going on there? That seems kind of weird. So that's what the SIEM does. It takes all those logs. It looks at all the logs. It parses through all the information, reads all the information that's in those logs and says, oh, this looks malicious. This looks, you know, abnormal, and you should probably take a look at it. So it sends you an alert. So the big SIEM vendor out there right now is still Splunk. Splunk is probably the top dog, I would say. But there are others out there. Sumo Logic is kind of the baby Splunk, if you will. But there are tons of SIEMs out there. Rapid7 has a SIEM. CrowdStrike has a SIEM now. There's a lot of different vendors that have their own SIEM. But Splunk is still kind of the top dog, especially for larger enterprises. But you will see some others. QRadar is probably up there. QRadar is made by IBM, or at least it was. I think it still is. But yeah, those are just a few. But anyway, the SIEM is something that every security program should have, right? So that way you can correlate all those logs and events. And that way, too, you have a central point where you can do your investigations, right? Rather than having to log into, you know, the firewall, log into the server, log into this, log into that, and read all those logs. Well, now all those logs are in one place. And you don't have to read them all. The SIEM does it for you and sends you alerts. But if you need to investigate further, all those logs are centrally stored. You can get in there and start investigating. So it makes your life a lot easier. So another very basic cybersecurity control is your email gateway. What is an email gateway? You probably heard of spam filtering. things like that. You know, you can give it a lot of different names, but your email gateway is what sits in front of your email server and filters out all the bad stuff. So this is something that's paramount nowadays, because if you don't have an email filter, then you're very likely going to get phished. Phishing is, of course, still the number one threat vector, unfortunately. The last study that was done by Deloitte in like 2021 or 2022, they found that 91% of all breaches started with a phishing email. So having that email gateway in front of your email servers is basically a security 101 kind of thing. If you don't have that, you're going to get phished. And then, you know, once you're phished, you're kind of up a creek. But the email filters out there, the big ones, Proofpoint is probably the top dog, I would guess. Mimecast is right behind that. So those are kind of the two bigger vendors. Now, of course, Microsoft has their own, and there are a few others out there as well. But those are kind of the two that most people go with, is Proofpoint or Mimecast. And each one of those tools has their own advantages and disadvantages, but it's doing the same thing. It's blocking malicious attachments. It's blocking malicious URLs. It's blocking any other kind of suspicious messages that's trying to impersonate somebody or whatever it is. There's lots of different controls, and we'll dive into these in much more detail in coming episodes. But the email gateway is definitely security 101 and a must-have for anybody. So Mimecast and Proofpoint are the two biggest ones out there for that. You can look at other stuff too, like your firewalls. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer, security 101 kind of stuff. And so, you know, the bigger firewall vendors, you have F5, you've got Palo Alto, you've got Checkpoint, and I'm sure there's others out there, Fortinet, right? There's a whole bunch. Palo Alto is, you know, seems to be the top dog in a lot of situations. You know, Cisco, of course, has their own set of firewalls too. Cisco is still kind of the leader in networking equipment in general, so they're right up there with Palo Alto as far as firewalls go. So I'd say it's Cisco and Palo Alto are your two bigger firewall vendors. And then, you know, once you're in those firewalls, there's so much control that you can put in place. It's probably a full episode just on firewall controls. But regardless, that's, a very security 101 kind of thing, where you'd get an email gateway, you'd get a firewall, and you would get antivirus or endpoint protection, right? Those are kind of the very, very basics as far as security tools go. Now, there are a lot of others out there. We're just barely scratching the surface here, but those are kind of the big no-brainers that you want to get right out of the gate. As your program matures, you're going to look at a lot more security tools, and we'll dive into a whole bunch as these episodes continue and as we get more and more in depth. But the goal is to kind of start out slow here, you know, teach you the basics, the security 101 kind of stuff. And then as these episodes continue, we'll dive into each one of these topics much more deeply. But so you've got the security tools I just mentioned, the firewalls, the endpoint protection, the SIEM. Those are what you would call blue team or defensive security controls. You also have red team. So blue team, red team, you'll hear those terms a lot. The blue team is defense, the red team is offense. So when you think offensive security, you think of penetration testing. So ethical hacking, you're trying to hack into something and exploit a vulnerability to gain access. So that's what the red team does. So there are security tools on the red team side of things that those folks are going to use to try to exploit vulnerabilities. So in that case, you'd have things like, well, Kali Linux is probably your biggest tool set in general. It's a Linux distribution that has hundreds, if not over 1,000 tools that are pre-installed into that operating system. So Kali Linux, if you're looking to dive into offensive security, is pretty much where you want to start. Offensive security, though, is a whole beast in and of itself. There's a lot to it. And being able to do penetration testing takes a lot of, I would say, persistence, because if you don't get in the first time, well, are you just going to give up or are you going to keep trying, right? And then how many times do you try? What all can you try? There's a lot of different techniques and tools out there to help you do pen testing, but how far do you take it? It takes a lot of creativity because, You know, oh, this server's got a port open on it. Okay, what can I do to exploit that server? What tools can I use to exploit that service that's running on that port, right? So that's what the red team has to think about. They also do social engineering. So they're going to phish people. They're going to call people on the phone and try to pretend like they're help desk or whatever. Or they might send SMS phishing messages, right? There's a lot of different ways. But that's the red team side. You'll also hear purple team is when those two teams work together to make the security controls better. But I digress a little bit here. We were talking about security tools. So you've got the red team tools that are more of the hacker's toolbox, and then you've got the blue team, which is more defensive. Metasploit is also a big tool on the hacker side. Cobalt Strike is another big one. And there's plenty of Bloodhound. There's a lot that you can dive into. Nmap, all those are in Kali Linux, and so you can download that distribution for free, spin it up in a virtual machine and start hacking away. But it does take a lot of understanding of how things work, what services run on what ports, and then how do you exploit whatever service that is, right? So there's definitely a lot to that. Okay, let's see. I think for this episode, I'm going to pause there. I think that was enough. We're right about the 30-minute mark. So again, in recap here, this was about security in the workplace, and then just a very basic intro into some of the cybersecurity tools that are out there for both blue team and red team. So next episode, we're going to talk about incident response. So how do you respond to a cybersecurity incident? So we're going to dive into that on the next episode. So appreciate everybody listening. Take care, and we'll talk again soon.